This is UN Interviews with me, Conor Lennon. Now, when UNHCR, that's the UN Refugee Agency, released its annual report on global trends in June, it showed, for the 12th year in a row, record numbers of displacement, and that's around 120 million people, the size of a considerable country. Conflict remains the key factor behind those figures, and the report noted that the climate crisis is often a driver of that conflict. On the ground, in the countries particularly affected, the United Nations is working closely with governments and civil society to support development in the face of these problems, so that people can lead peaceful lives and no longer need to leave home. In the studio with me today is Mohamed Fall. He's the UN resident coordinator in Nigeria, where the climate crisis is deeply impacting the population. Thanks for being with us in the studio, Mr. Fall.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me in your program.
Well, it is my pleasure to have you here to, as I say, find out what's actually happening in the countries most affected by the climate crisis, displacement, conflict. I mean, we're unfortunately hearing that about that a lot in West Africa, and Nigeria is the most populous country in that region. But it's been reported, in fact, that clashes between communities are just as dangerous as the terrorism we so often hear about from the likes of Boko Haram in the Sahel region.
Indeed, but even that clashes between communities, it's strongly driven by the climate crisis, because one of the main clash sources of clash between community is when the herdsmen look for grazing land and come across the farming land of the farmers. What happened is that the ecosystem in Nigeria is fragile. Nigeria is very vulnerable to climate change. A good part of the country now is what is we call the Sahel, which is facing cycle of drought, sometimes also cycle of flooding, pushing the herdsmen to go for where they could find graze for their cattle. And then, of course, this is one of the major driver of the clashes. But as I say, also, it's displacement is not triggered only by conflict. Displacement also is triggered by the devastating impact of the climate crisis, like flood, drought, and people always move to where they can have better life.
So we should point out that these intercommunal tensions between more nomadic herds people and farmers, these aren't new. I mean, this has been happening for a long time, these tensions, but what you're saying is that it is noticeably much more intense than it has been in the past.
Because, yes, as you say, it has been there for quite some time, but it has been exacerbated because now most of the place where you have people living a nomadic life around herding cattles, those are the places that are mostly affected by drought. And when you don't have grass for the animals, people tend to move toward the places where the grazing land is much better. And unfortunately there, they will clash with farmers who are having also their farming activities. And I think that's something that is really driven to me by the exacerbation of the consequence of climate crisis.
And in Nigeria, I mean, that's primarily internal displacement, so not people moving to other countries, but moving to better land within Nigeria. Whereabouts is that movement coming from, i.e. where are people going from and where are they going to?
Most of the time they go from the north and they come to the central part of the country, which is called the Middle Belt, where you have grazing, but sometimes they can go further down to the south. And sometimes also they can go across countries. But this is creating also a mix of those clash plus, of course, other issues. Like if you take the Middle Belt, the state that is mostly affected is the state of Benue. But Benue has also a border with Western Cameroon, where, as you know, there is an insurgency, there is a movement that push population. And then you have a mix of refugees and IDPs becoming much more complex and much more difficult to manage.
Now, for those who don't know how it works in countries, you, as a resident coordinator, you represent the UN at the highest level, and you have many different representatives of the many different agencies in UN House. Tell me a bit about how that coordination works and how easily or not easily you're able to respond to certain crises or to help aid development in a certain part of Nigeria.
Let's say we are 26 UN agencies in Nigeria, including 19 that have presence, and those are the rest. The other seven are what we call non-resident agencies. It means they are not physically present, but they engage in the country, they send experts, they come on mission. What we try to do is to look at the situation as it is and bring in the different assets that UN has. As you say, we have UNHCR dealing with the refugees, we have FAO supporting agriculture, we have WHO doing health, we have WFP providing food and making sure that food insecurity is addressed properly. You have a number of assets that pull together make the UN response very significant. Now, what is happening is that people, when they are under those shock and they are in a movement of displacement, you have the needs that are very urgent that we respond to through what we call quick and high impact, which is usually using the humanitarian instrument, the humanitarian assistance for the displacement. But we are looking also for much longer term, medium and longer term solution, which is what we call durable solution for IDPs. And maybe for the sake of the listeners, Nigeria have launched 3 weeks ago what we call the state plan for durable solution to the return of the IDPs. Which is part of this.
Sorry, internally displaced people.
Internally displaced people as part of the Secretary General initiative of addressing the displacement across the globe. There has been 15 countries that are in the initiative, and Nigeria was the first that have a plan which was prepared in a participatory way, which was budgeted, which engaged, and which was driven by the local authority, mainly the state governor, and to launch those plans. But those plans were mostly focusing on 3 states that have been affected by the Boko Haram insurgency. But they serve also as a blueprint to address issues in other parts of the country. Like in Benue also, they are part of parcel of the process. They are not yet from to where the other states are, but we are helping them to develop their capacity, to do the planning, to do the budgeting, to do what it takes to that. Just in short, it will be twofold intervention. One will be the immediate one to save life, to reduce vulnerability, which we call the humanitarian assistance. The other one is also we look for longer term solution where we look for conflict resolution, bring about peace, help IDP to return to where they were coming from, give them livelihood that can help them to regain their dignity, help them, their children or their families, to get back to social services like education, like health, like water and sanitation. In some, UN work both in the humanitarian front to address the immediate need, but also in the development front to address the medium and longer term solution.
So how positive are you that that development, if it's done right, if it's done in a coordinated way, could actually help to help Nigeria to deal with problems such as terrorism, intercommunal violence and the climate crisis? Do you really think that if development's done right, it could really set Nigeria on a positive path? Because it's a very young, very populous nation, a very vibrant nation. It potentially has a lot going for it.
That's our strong belief, that development is a lasting solution to some of these issues that we are dwelling with in Nigeria. All this conflict, if you dig down, you will realize that, yes, there has been insurgency, there is extreme violence, there is terrorism, but they are building on a ground that are fertile, because those ground are ground where you have prolonged development deficit. It's places where you have high level of poverty. It's places where, you know, people don't access services like education, like health. Those fragile conditions are the one on which usually the propaganda of the jihadists or of the people getting into extreme violence use to recruit young people, to mobilize. That's why I think that moving on any counterterrorism operation requires, of course, security architecture that will address the violence, but it requires also working beyond security to look at what are the deficits in terms of development, in terms of protection, in terms of access to service. And if you don't solve those problems, I'm sure that the issues that triggered violence will remain or will last forever.
Now, you came to the role fairly recently, well, February of this year, after a long stint at UNICEF. When you came into this role, did you have any particular outcome that you wanted to reach by the end of your mandate? Do you have like a particular goal in mind?
My specific goal is how we can position UN and make it more relevant in the context of Nigeria. Because what we tend to forget is that also Nigeria, yes, might appear in the international news or in the headline like a country with a lot of challenges, but it's a country that have massive opportunity also. It's a country that is extremely rich. I think it's one of the second, it was until recently the biggest country, the biggest economy in the continent. I think with the depreciation of the currency, the new ranking gives them, put them at a third position. It's a country that have huge wealth in terms of natural resources, including resources for the future, like, for example, resources that can allow energy transition towards renewable energy. It has also a human resources and a human capital, which is extremely great. It has a country, it's a country which is very vibrant when it comes to, you know, private sector development, services development, when it comes to art, culture, sport. But it's also a country that have resilient people. I think our role as a UN is how we can build on the opportunity and the potential of the country to look at and to address the challenges. Because as I always say, next to every challenges, you have an opportunity. How UN can we harness and help the government to harness this opportunity? And I think by doing so and by rechanging and changing the narrative in a way that shows the opportunity, in a way that shows the potential of the country, we are also giving hope to the young people of Nigeria, which is, for me, one of the biggest endeavor of UN, how you can help people to get back on their feet when they are facing extreme suffering, but how also you create a situation where people have hope that they can have a better future in their own country and that the country have a potential to serve their aspiration.
Well, it's been great to catch you here in New York, Mr. Fall, and I hope that we can come and see you at UN House in Nigeria to see for ourselves some of these development projects and initiatives that the UN is working on in the country. Thank you so much for being here today.
You are most welcome to Nigeria, and thank you for having me in your program.
Fantastic.